I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shock the world. Shock the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Powered it forward, Jack Price in goal.
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
We'll give you the ball so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh. Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Wednesday, November 28th, 2018, the week after Turkey Day. The Colorado Avalanche are currently up 1-0 in the second period on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mark Goodman, my friend, who are you rooting for in this hockey game in the battle between a team from Colorado that wears burgundy and a team from Pittsburgh that wears gold?
The guy's wearing skates? I don't care. Hockey's just, you know, if you, I don't know. I think I'd rather watch, figure skating, personally. Nobody gets hurt in figure skating. Nobody knocks anybody else down in figure skating. It's easier to see the puck in figure skating.
There's no puck in figure skating, Mark, but okay. Let me amend that question. Let's say that the Rapids are playing the River Hounds in the Open Cup final.
It's a good question. Who would win that one? It's a really good.
I'm just mad. Like, who are you rooting for? Which scarf and jersey and hat are you taking to the stadium?
That's clearly one of those moments. That's one of the rare moments in human history where the dual team scarf actually makes sense. Those are so dumb. And actually, one of my friends gave me one of those as a going away present. It's a very odd going away present from Colorado. He gave me like a 2009 Chelsea Manchester United dual scarf. So it's like two teams that I don't really know or like and knitted into one scarf together. It was a very odd gift, and I tried to be very excited and happy because, you know, you try to take a gift from someone and look like you appreciate it, but I think I failed. I think I was clear in expressing my kind of level of disappointment. Like, I told him, you know, that I like soccer scarves. So I mean, he'd lived in England or he'd been to England. So I thought he maybe, you know, had one from a team, but no, he gave me the weird dual scarf from two teams I don't like. He knew I was an Arsenal fan. It was weird. Anyhow.
That is really weird. I don't think in my entire soccer scarf collection that I have a single dual scarf. I feel like for me at least, it really only makes sense for a final and really no other scenario for me. And for me, it would have to be a final involving a team that I cover or a team that I care about or that I'm a fan of. And really, knowing this experience from in college, the University of Miami Hurricanes going to 3 bowl games in my 4 years and losing all 3 of them, I really only want the dual stuff from the actual event if the event itself carries positive memories. Like if it was a Rapids MLS Cup scarf from 2010, for example, you know, the Rapids just celebrated, you know, the 8th year anniversary of that the other week. If I'm an FC Dallas fan and I buy that scarf and then FC Dallas ends up losing, I'm not sure that I want to keep that scarf. That scarf is just a reminder of a horrible final that you lost on an own goal. And on the other side, you know, from the Rapids perspective, yes, that's positive, but you know, I would only get it afterwards knowing that it would be a positive memory. But if I was a Toronto FC fan, for example, going to BMO Field, I'm not sure that I would care to have that commemorative dual team scarf from a final that my team was not involved in.
Agreed.
In other news, Mark, how was your first Thanksgiving in Pittsburgh? How did that go?
It was okay. My mother-in-law made the turkey. You know, that was fun. We had this, I was thinking while you were talking about dual scarves, we had this piece on the pitch the weekend before, which was a fundraiser soccer game for Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh and the Department of Health and Safety here in Allegheny County, which those are the first responders who were involved in the Tree of Life shooting. And it was a great event. If I could advise the Colorado Rapids to do one cool event, it would be to get supporters out for a charity soccer match at some point, like a pickup or a 7v7 at DSGP to raise money for a good cause. You know, as much as I'm sure the World Championship of Wine and Beer, the World Cup of Wine and Beer, whatever, is fun, it's really, really fun to get fans out to a game. And I just wanted to relay this because it shows how stupid I am. I bought 10 raffle tickets for a whole bunch of really cool, like a lot of cool donated stuff. Like there was a Reno sign ball and kit. There was some stuff from like Nashville SC. There was stuff from Red Bulls 2 and Toronto 2. There was this really cool Heineken New York Red Bulls like neon thing. And I was like, oh, cool. I hope I win one of those. And then at the end, I didn't win anything. And one of my friends won something. And he goes, yeah, you know, I just saw that nobody had put their tickets in the bowl. And so I took all my tickets and I put it in that bowl. And I look at him and I'm like, you were supposed to put tickets in a bowl? And I didn't realize that, like, you're supposed to take one half of the raffle ticket and put it in the little bowl with the item that you want. So that was embarrassing and I felt dumb. But I gave $10 to a good cause. And so if anyone... My connection to that is, so if anyone wants to buy me a scarf for Reno or Toronto FC2, and mail it to me because I'm stupid, I will accept that gift.
Good stuff, Mark. I had a good Thanksgiving, went back to see the family. Not a whole lot of controversy. I actually found out, 2017 last year, we have about 9 people that are regulars for our Thanksgiving, and I found out at the Thanksgiving table that amongst the 9 of us, we had no more than 2 people vote for the same person for president. Which, you know, figure out the math very quickly, and you find out that there are multiple protest write-ins and votes for people who are neither on the Democratic or the Republican ticket. So, fairly good stuff on that front. And I did get to meet the 2 new cats who are basically cat-shaped Ewoks, which was really, really fun. Now I'm getting ready for ski season, but let's get into it, Mark. This past, Monday, I assume before 1 p.m. Eastern, the Colorado Rapids notified Major League Soccer of their decisions regarding the 2019 contract options for the players that had team options. They then chose to not tell the fans or the public or anybody else until the following morning, that had Rapids Twitter in a little bit of a tizzy on Monday afternoon. But let's go through it. Mark. The players who are picked up, there were 4 players who had 2019 team options that the Rapids chose to exercise. Defender Declan Wynn, midfielder and homegrown Dylan Serna, midfielder Kellen Acosta, and forward Nicky Jackson. The Rapids had 8 players who they ultimately chose to decline 2019 options for. Giles Barnes, defender Mike DeFont, who was on loan for almost the entire season, at Phoenix Rising FC. Sam Hamilton, Richie Perez, Caleb Calvert, Jack Campine, Kip Colvey, and Enzo Martinez. And the Rapids currently have 3 players on the roster that ended the season that are out of contract. Goalkeeper Andrew Dykstra, forward Yannick Boley, who we knew was on a 1-year deal, and then Edgar Castillo. The Rapids chose not to pick up the pre-arranged transfer fee purchase option on Castillo, but negotiations are continuing on that front, and we're gradually getting more leaked out information from the other teams around the league, non-playoff teams, who made their roster exercise decisions. Let's start with the players picked up. Mark, your thoughts on the 4 players who the Rapids chose to maintain and where they're standing with the club will be going into 2019.
I'd say 3 of them were not surprises at all. Everybody knew that. I didn't know that Kellen Acosta was out of contractor at the end of this year. Maybe that's just me, but I wasn't paying close enough attention. But clearly the Rapids acquired Kellen Acosta with the goal of hanging on to him. Declan Lynn was decent and serviceable at left back. And, you know, he's still a young man at 22. And he made 25 appearances, and he was making basically the veteran minimum of 67,000. So there weren't a lot of reasons to not re-sign a guy like that. And then Nicky Jackson blew away all expectations. He made the rookie minimum of 54,000. And because he was on the supplemental roster, when he came on, he actually cost the team 0.
against the cap. So there was no reason not to re-sign him. The one I guess I'm surprised about, although it's only mild surprise, is Dylan Cerna. Cerna counts as a homegrown, so the Rapids got a $30,000 break on his price. He was getting paid $95,000, but he only counted for $67,000 against the cap. But, you know, at 24 years old, Cerna's never quite become something that you get really excited about. I mean, he's really consistent in the 4 years that he's been, over the 5 years, I think he's been with the Rapids, that he shows flashes of absolute brilliance. He'll have a banger of a goal from 40 yards out. He'll put on a move and burn three guys. And then he'll have a series of games in a row where he's just kind of lost, or he's not particularly. I mean, the knock on Dylan Cerna is that when he doesn't have the ball at his feet, he's a little bit underwhelming. And I think that that's him. I was kind of hoping that he would be sent along to someplace else where he could be a little bit more of an impact player. But I guess, you know, at the price and considering everything, it's really good to stash him in the cupboard. Any thoughts on you, Matt, for those four guys?
No, I agree for the most part. You know, I think just one quick fact check. Maybe your spreadsheet isn't updated, Mark, but Declan Wynn is now 23 years old. He'll be 24 on March 20th of next year. But, you know, I agree. I think Nicky Jackson and Kellen Acosta, you know, were, you know, write their names in Sharpie in terms of players that the Rapids were going to bring back for next year. Regardless of what you think about either Wynn or Cerna, their potential standing with the team, should they be starting, or the thing that you just mentioned that we've talked about a lot in 2018 is, you know, where's Cerna's ceiling? Where role does he actually fit in? The fact that he hasn't really locked into anything, you know, under two head coaches now is a bit of a concern. But if nothing else, from an asset management standpoint, you know, these are all four, you know, all four players who have value. Kellen Acosta is going to be a starting center midfielder for the team next season. Nicky Jackson, I think at worst is, you know, a striker off the bench that you have, or a guy that you can put in at various moments. You know, Anthony Hudson and Declan Wynn go back to their time with the New Zealand men's national team. If anybody is going to bring whatever is going to bring good stuff out of Declan Wynn and help him achieve his potential in MLS, it's probably going to be Anthony Hudson. And like you mentioned, at his age, it's probably going to be more than a one-year project. We'll see what he and what Declan Wynn can get done in their second year together. And then, again, regardless of what you think about Dylan Cerna, you know, he fills in a couple of different gaps for the team. He has that homegrown tag that gives you a lot of flexibility from a financial standpoint, from a roster flexibility standpoint. And, you know, if nothing else, he's an asset that the Rapids can move along. If the Rapids chose to decline his option, the next thing for Dylan Cerna is that he goes into the reentry draft, in which another team could potentially select him effectively for free. And then, so there's the initial reentry draft in which they would take him on the 2019 option, and then another one where they would take him and do a little bit of renegotiation there. And I just think for a player of his caliber, of his age, and then also carrying that homegrown tag, that asset would be too, you know, that would be too valuable for another team to not take a flyer on him. So at the very least, if you're going to decide to move along from Dylan Cerna, at least now you carry his rights, and then in order for another team to pick him up, there's going to have to be a trade or a transfer somewhere in there. So if nothing else, Dylan Cerna is an asset that you have that you flip for something you do have value if they decide that Dylan Cerna does not have value with them in the 2019 season. But I'm fine with all four of these guys coming back in. I think there'll be regulars involved, you know, in, you know, the 25-man roster. And if they are back with the team, I presume that they would be getting playing time on some level in 2018. Most significantly, Acosta will probably play 2,000 minutes. Nicky Jackson could, who I think easily could get 20 total appearances next year. Let's move on to the players who were declined, Mark. How do you want to go through this? I have everybody in kind of three main categories. I think the clear and obvious, they weren't going to do anything with them. The homegrown young players who the Rapids chose to cut bait with. And then Kip Colvey and Enzo Martinez, who I'm a little bit puzzled by. Where do you want to start?
That's one way of slicing it. One other way to slice it is really expensive, you know, mid-grade players and cheap players who the team clearly cuts bait with because they're just taking up a roster spot that they think could be allocated to another, you know, minimum budget charge that might, you know, show up. Like, basically, that kind of guy is, why give Sam Hamilton a spot on the bench when you could give a guy, you know, the 2019 iteration of Nicky Jackson, a guy who, you know, you'll pick up in the draft. Maybe he'll surprise you in camp. Maybe he'll score a banger in his very first appearance. And suddenly, you know, you've got a guy. So, yeah, if you're going to slice it, Matt, you should slice it your way, and you should get first dibs on this so that I can say all the – I can say I completely agree with you, as is your custom.
Okay. I'll start with the young players then. So I guess the middle category that I have, so the three homegrowns who they cut bait with, Ricardo Perez, Caleb Calvert, and Jack McBean, and then I'll lump Sam Hamilton in there even though he was a draft pick and does not carry the homegrown tag at the MLS level. All of these players, with the exception of I think maybe McBean and Calvert via some of that homegrown money, were all making under six figures. In any case, their cap hit to the Rapids was under six figures. I believe Sam Hamilton was on the league minimum of $67,000. And was it $5.05? You might know that number better than I do off the top of your head, Mark. And I guess I was a little bit puzzled by this just with the news that I talked about with Mark Turner last week on when we had the interview pod, was about the potential for the Rapids to start getting more value out of these depth options, some of the homegrowns that were coming through the pipeline or who were already on the team, and then some of their draft picks. I feel like all four of those guys would have been ripe for an opportunity with the switchbacks, either, you know, going up and down between the two clubs or potentially a full season-long loan. You know, I realize, you know, Perez didn't really rate at the USL level with Charlotte Independence in 2018. So, you've signed a guy, you've had him in camp, you know, you've had him for part of preseason. He goes to a USL team, a relatively mid-table USL team, and he can't even get off the bench unless the coach really, you know, didn't care for him. You know, what does that say about you from a talent standpoint? You know, Caleb Calvert was playing regularly in Charlotte. He had 18 games played, but only one goal in league competition. That's not good for a striker who already didn't really have a good track record in terms of offensive production. You know, he would go in and he'd be a little bit physical, but Calvert didn't put the ball in the back of the net when the opportunity provided. And, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about Jack McBean. Somebody's probably yelling at us right now thinking, you know, why are you guys even defending him? You know, over 2,000 minutes played, I think almost an entire season, only two goals in all competition. One was a PK, one was a tap-in when he got a lucky bounce off of a rebound. He's never scored more than two goals in a single league season. You know, we've talked about how he's probably a above-average USL striker, but not really productive at the MLS level. I think the thing that just really, not surprises me, Mark, but, you know, a statement that the Rapids are clearly making to these four guys: you're on a team that almost won the Wooden Spoon in 2018. You were at the bottom of the rung in terms of salary and everything. You know, it's not like you were costing them a lot of money. It's not like your option was going to be something more expensive. You know, and because some of the cases, they're only costing you the league minimum. And for a team that was at the bottom of the Western Conference, they decided it wasn't worth taking a flyer on you when they just came to an agreement with a USL team in the state of Colorado, specifically for players who are in your similar position. What does that say about you? And, you know, if the Rapids aren't willing to take you back, unless the San Jose Earthquakes really see something in you, or maybe Orlando City, you know, what really, you know, what future do you have at the MLS level? I think all four of these guys could walk into a USL team, could walk into USL and certainly find a position. It was announced earlier today that the New Mexico USL team that I can't remember the name of, that I think is playing in Santa Fe, they already signed Sam Hamilton. So, you know, I think there are serious doubts about the about the MLS future of all four of these guys. And I think the only thing that's remotely appealing about the three homegrowns is the fact that they have a homegrown tag that, you know, gives teams flexibility. You know, if I had to bet money right now, I would say probably all three of them are in USL or in USL next year. I would be shocked if Jack McBean or Caleb Calvert get more than 10 goals as a starter for a run-of-the-mill USL club.
I agree with all of that, Matt. The one thing I'll add to that is that with the league constantly expanding, and with the fact that, and these are my numbers based on a couple months ago, so you can correct me if your spreadsheet is different than mine. Calvert's 21, Hamilton's 22, Ricky Perez is 22, Jack McBean is 23.
That's not more than a year off from what I remember off the top of my head.
So,
let's say all four of them, like you and I both believe, will go to a USL team next year. And let's say they have a pretty good year, or they have two really good years. They all have a chance to get back into Major League Soccer, either with a big established club or to get into one of the teams that are joining the league in the next couple of years. Memphis, Nashville, Miami, Cincinnati. There are lots of, and then potentially Sacramento down the road. So there's lots of opportunities. There's more jobs opening up in soccer. And if not, you know, if they're just top level USL players, there are some very big USL clubs out there that do quite well and are fun to watch. So, you know, like I think, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's not the worst thing in the world to sit down and turn to a player and say, you know, you didn't get on the field with us at all this year. You didn't get on the field with us at all last year. You couldn't break through. We'd like to see you get some playing time somewhere else. We'll talk to some GMs. We'll help you, hopefully make a soft landing somewhere else and get to play more, you know, first team soccer, maybe at the second division level. I think, from my understanding of talking to, Rapids front office staff over the last couple of years, those can be hard conversations, but they can be really good conversations, really healthy conversations. And you know, last thing I'll say, soccer players are really used to that. I don't know if you know this, Matt, but so the high school that I worked at in Colorado actually rented out space once every 3 months to the entire Rapids Academy staff to hold one-on-one meetings between parents, coaches, and players. And it was an evaluation meeting, and they would sit down and they say, we think you're doing well at this, we think you're not doing well at this, we want you to work on this, we think here's where you're headed, you know. And it was a frank discussion about what a player was doing well, what they weren't doing well, and what their trajectory was. And they start having these meetings with kids when they're 10 years old, you know. Granted, mom's there, but most soccer players and most academies work on this model, which means you're evaluated and you're in the loop about your level of evaluation all the time. So I don't think that Sam Hamilton or Ricky Perez woke up on Monday, got called into the GM's office. By the way, I'm saying this because I think a couple people on Twitter thought that the you know, almost 24-hour delay between the Rapids revealing information and to fans and the deadline might have been that they needed to notify the players. No. They've notified the players
knew last week, I would bet, if not sooner.
I'm sure that Sam Hamilton and Ricky Perez had been in communication with the front office, hopefully anyways, for months, and knew that, like, you know, if they weren't going to get on the field, there wasn't a great chance that they were going to get re-signed. So they knew what, you know, they knew not to re-sign a 3-year lease for their apartment.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you, Mark. I think, and you know, you mentioned other jobs opening up. I believe with all the expansion teams in the USL Championship, the second division next year, that the USL is going up to, I think, 40 teams in the second division. Obviously, League One will be kicking off as well with at least 10 teams. So you're right that there's a lot of jobs to open up. You know, there's a lot of open spaces, and I think all four of these guys can certainly fill that and have it be a productive and financially, you know, stable part of their career. I guess I wouldn't be shocked at all if an MLS team picks up any one of the three homegrowns that we're talking about right now, and then, you know, just gives them a minimum something or other, and then finds them a soft landing spot, potentially in their MLS2 team that either still exists or is coming back, with the changes in USL, or maybe an opportunity in League One, or an opportunity with an expansion team that, you know, is looking for, you know, cheap first year options to fill out the rest of their roster. So it's not the end of the world for Caleb Calvert and Richie Perez and Jack McBean. I think it's clearly a statement in terms of where they stood with the Colorado Rapids. They're still young players, and they're still, I think, all capable of being productive players somewhere in professional soccer in the American pyramid. And, you know, we'll see where they end up landing. So we took one of my designations for the first group, Mark. So let's take your designation for some combination of Giles Barnes, Mike DeFont, Kip Colvey, and Enzo Martinez.
Yeah, so those kind of mid-grade, not super young guys. I have some of the same slight puzzlement with not bringing back Enzo Martinez that I think you expressed, but probably less so. You know, he didn't
he made a lot of appearances. He kind of lost any hope of starting towards the end of the season. He got surpassed by a 17-year-old at midfield, and he never really found his game. You know, my understanding, having watched him, having talked to the folks in Charlotte about his game, was that he was that kind of dribbly number 10 who could also be a stick in your foot kind of box to box number 8 type player. And it never seemed like he was given either the right, he never really found his position exactly with the Rapids. You know, they were in a 5-3-2. He didn't find his role there. He played a lot on the wing as a midfielder in a 5-3-2, which is an odd kind of way to deploy a guy. And then when they switched to the diamond midfield, he actually looked pretty good as the shuttler, in one or two games, but mostly he was kind of the fourth best midfielder out of four, almost always on the field. And that was disappointing. And I think, you know, Enzo, I sometimes think, and I think we probably mentioned this throughout the year at some point, I feel like Enzo Martinez probably either got bad advice at some point or wasn't quite coached properly in order to succeed, and never really found his place on the team and his game in the formation. And I think he will go somewhere else next year and probably be fairly successful. And people will scratch their heads and be like, well, why wasn't he doing that with the Rapids? That's my guess. He's still really at the peak of his skills and ability. He's 27 years old. And he's been really, really good in the past. Giles Barnes is cooked. I mean, he had one good game, and it was his first good game where fans saw him, and he looked, his first touch was really good. He was electric and exciting. And then he never did anything interesting again for the rest of the time with Colorado. And you know, he got hurt in that game a little bit. And so maybe the physicality, has passed him by at the age of now turning 31. And you know, his salary has also plummeted precipitously. He was making, I think, 700,000 or 900,000 with Orlando, and now he was making 200,000 with the Rapids, you know, and he didn't do much. So the question then becomes, like, he's an expensive veteran. Does anybody want him? You know, usually that kind of like veteran leadership in the locker room, I always think that the best value of that, a guy like that, is to call him coach and not actually charge six figures to make him a player. Colby's now taking a physician's assistant program at the University of Denver, which I think is a great move for Kip Colby. So good luck to him. And who is our fourth? I keep forgetting.
The impeccable Mike DeFont.
Yeah, I don't really have anything interesting to say about Mike DeFont. Hopefully he stays in the USL, where he actually lost his starting spot at left back for Phoenix Rising last year, which tells you pretty much all you need to know about where Mike DeFont's career has gone.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast right now and you think that, you know, you're surprised that Mike DeFont was cut, you either did not watch last season or you probably should unsubscribe or turn us off right now. You know, I agree with, I look at Enzo Martinez, Mark, and he was always pretty much this entire season, except for those couple of games where Hudson was just rotating everything up top in the 4-4-2 diamond. He was consistently a square peg that the Rapids were trying to shove into a round hole. Like you mentioned, he was a dribbly number 10, and for 2 years at Charlotte Independence, he was a best 11 caliber player, and he was, a finalist for the USL MVP, the player of the year. And then the Rapids came here and wanted to turn him into, you know, a high intensity run number 8. And there were some things that he got involved in offensively that did fit his skill set. And there was a lot of stuff that the Rapids were asking him to do that didn't really work with him. Now, you could argue that there's a pretty poor track record in terms of a player being productive offensively at the USL level, and then that production converting to high quality opportunities and goals and assists created at the MLS level. If I think of, you know, a USL Golden Boot winner going to an MLS team, and are they even going to get on the field? Are they going to compete with a Nemanja Nikolic, a now departed David Villa? And the answer to that question, based on precedent and based on history has been unequivocally no. So I guess my issue more with Martinez getting cut is the Rapids never really utilized him. Again, similar to the rookies, I would say, you know, he wasn't costing them a whole lot of money. There were a couple of different things that he could do really, really well that the team wanted. He said in the final press availability after the game on decision day that he came in and, you know, Hudson was looking for him to change the game, provide something to help them get back into the match. He really wanted him, you know, Martinez said that Hudson said, I want you back next year. Do something to try and earn that. And, you know, he helped create, you know, the Cole Bassett goal that then helped spur the turnover or the turnaround and the comeback against FC Dallas, winning the game 2-1. So I kind of walked away from that thinking, okay, Hudson wants him back. He did something in the game. You know, I would have thought that, okay, like Enzo Martinez, you know, officially punched his ticket for being on the Rapids in 2019. So based on that information, I was a little bit surprised that he didn't come back, you know, you were a best 11 candidate at the USL level. You were making the league minimum in MLS and you were on one of the worst teams in MLS and they chose not to keep you. That said, I think Martinez walks into the starting lineup of, you know, there's a handful of USL teams, expansion or existing, that Martinez could walk in, be a starter and could be, a 10 goal, 7 assist guy. I think he'll totally land on his feet. I just don't know that it's going to happen, in MLS. The only real question that I have about Kip Colby, well, I guess, two fronted, similar to Declan Wynn, you know, he was kind of a pet project in 2018 for Anthony Hudson, and the fact that they're not bringing him back, I think, is, you know, a clear indication that that didn't really work. I guess my question is, did Colby make this decision based on the decision the Rapids were making, or was this something that he was already mulling over, and then knowing that Colby wasn't going to come back, the Rapids pretty much, you know, knew that they, you know, that they were going to decline his option? And was he maybe thinking about this during the middle of the season, where I had a couple conversations with Hudson to where he said that, you know, there were fitness issues, there was question of commitment, and just a few other things that he had to figure out as a professional soccer player in order to get back into the good graces and back into the starting lineup? Was that simply a adjustment to the system? Was that adjustment to altitude? Was that adjustment to being more than just a reserve player, which is what he was after getting drafted by San Jose Earthquakes, for example? Or was potentially he in the back of his mind thinking, you know, I don't know that I want to play soccer. I think I'm going to go back to school. And was that maybe affecting Colby's performance? And then either the Rapids either knew that that was something that he was contemplating and then thinking about moving on, or elsewise. That's not something that I would follow up from a journalistic standpoint. You know, that's between Kip Colby, the family members that he was discussing, and whatever Rapids personnel he was making that decision in. But I wonder which is the chicken and which is the egg there. Because we've seen now a couple times, particularly two players for the Chicago Fire retire at very early ages. And we've seen this with a few other cases where players kind of realize that they've kind of run their course in MLS, and either by their salaries or maybe the homegrown situation, like they're just not really willing to, you know, go to Reno and make $30,000 a year, you know, when they have, you know, a finance degree from Stanford, for example. I agree with everything that you said about Giles Barnes. I guess the only thing that'll add his rapid salary, you know, for the 6-month contract was $200,000, which means prorated for an entire year was going to be $400,000. If you told me that Giles Barnes was coming back at $100,000 and, you know, it was going to be an Alan Gordon, you know, wily veteran coming in and play 10 games, but is really there to mentor some of the young kids and basically be, you know, a coach that actually wears training gear and has to train, I'd be okay with it. I don't know where Barnes goes at this point. I don't see an MLS team picking up his contract. Is he willing to go to USL at this point, given that, you know, he's originally from England? You know, he was out of the Derby Academy and spent most of his career, or he signed with them originally, I think was there for 5 or 6 years. You know, could he find a landing spot in League One? I have absolutely no idea. Or as a Jamaican international, does he want to go and play in the first division in Jamaica? I think, you know, there's a couple of different avenues that Giles Barnes could go at this point. I don't know what's open. I don't know what he'd be remotely interested in, either from a professional atmosphere standpoint or a financial standpoint. Let's close out this conversation, Mark, with looking at the players who are out of contract with the Rapids. As mentioned, third-string goalkeeper Andrew Dykstra, Yannick Bolli, who was on a one-year contract, and then Edgar Castillo. Mark, where do you want to start here?
Well, I'll add one more, which is that Monday was also the official moment at which the Stefan Aigner contract evaporated. It meant that those money was off the books. So To me, the significant thing about all of those players is they cost a lot of money, and their money is now off the books. So they opened up, let's see, Boley, Eigner, and Dykstra just themselves open up $1.1 million in salary cap, and then add to that Boley and Eigner cost at least $740,000 in TAM or GAM. So that's a lot of money that becomes available to the Rapids. I don't know that the team is going to be spending big money above and beyond those allocations next year. So that's the big thing. I don't think there's any doubt that Yannick Beaulieu was a total flop. He scored 2 goals in 17 appearances, and one of those was a PK. And the other one was a pretty cool header, but that doesn't change the fact that he was supposed to be the game-changing striker that the team desperately needed. And yet, instead, he really looked mediocre at best. You know, I mean, I think you could have a solid argument as to whether he was a better striker last year than Jack McBean, and Jack McBean was a lot cheaper, a lot cheaper, like almost $1 million cheaper. So that's insane. That's just an insane concept by itself. Andrew Dykstra, I didn't understand that move from the beginning. He never played a single meaningful – he never played an official minute for the Colorado Rapids, and he cost $107,000. So I don't know why they did that. I don't understand it. And in the end – man, I would love to make $107,000 to have no real purpose to what I was doing. That sounds like a great way to live. And then Edgar Castillo's out of contract, and I think it's likely the Rapids somehow find a way to re-sign him, just because I know that Monterrey is not going to find a way to use him. So between getting something and getting nothing, I mean, maybe Monterrey can sell him off to somebody else for a higher price, but I'm not exactly sure how that works. So, so I just feel like it's more likely that they come to terms.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Yeah. Go ahead. I agree with you on Dykstra. You know, I think, you know, for somebody that price, or, you know, somebody making the league minimum, there's a number of USL goalies who I think would love an opportunity to be, you know, an information sponge next to Tim Howard 4 days a week. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of goalkeepers they could draft right now. Mark, you'd know probably better if there was, you know, a homegrown opportunity, a player that they just wanted to stash in. With that, are there any homegrown goalies who are in the pipeline right now who potentially would benefit from talking to Tim Howard on a daily basis?
I mean, I thought Kai Likewise was the most likely player to get signed. He was with Charlotte in parts of the last 2 seasons. He was a homegrown player who went to Charlotte and didn't go to college. I think for the Rapids, the challenge with, putting a homegrown goalkeeper on is they tend to be, you know, they're likely to be years and years away from, being a starting player. And many of those homegrowns are currently in college. So you don't want to take them out of college. And they don't want to leave college because they may be playing regularly and they're developing. So, Trevor Mowry is the goalkeeper for Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo. And I'm not, I can't think of anybody else who's been a first team goalkeeper for the, Rapids, 18s or 23s. There's one or two other players, but nobody who, you know, is ready to start an MLS right now, like a Zach Steffens type player. So you let him play in college. So, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't have gotten a guy cheaper in USL, or kept who they had, which was, John Berner. You know, they didn't think that John Berner was likely to turn into a first team MLS caliber player, but, you know, you got him and you're not going to use him anyways. So why spend an extra $40,000? But, you know, that's chump change that's a weekend at the Dippin' Dots stands for the Colorado Rapids. So.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, I've said my piece on Yannick Beaulieu. I won't waste any of our listeners' time on that front. Oh, Castillo is...
It's amazing that Yannick Bolli is so bad and so forgettable that we could spend $1 million on a player and just try and move on and not talk about him because it's that painful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the one thing that I will give Porik Smith credit for from how he handled the striker situation in terms of signing players in 2018 is he took a couple short, almost trial-level flyers on players who were question marks or who were, you know, might work out, might not work out. Bolli being one of those. I would throw in the 1 year loan with Joe Mason with the option to buy. I would throw Jack McBean into that category and just, you know, let's take a bunch of flyers on these guys. Let's see what we can get out of them. And they may have invested a lot in terms of salary to those players for their budget for the 2018 season, but they didn't give anybody a whole lot of term. Bolli was on a 1 year deal. Worst case scenario, they just let Joe Mason's loan deal expire. He goes back to Wolves, and then they just don't pick up the option there. So if nothing else, it was let's take a bunch of flyers on guys, but then not commit to anybody. Whereas opposed to maybe, you know, administrations of yesteryear would have looked at Yannick Bolli and would have given him, you know, maybe that would have been at the time when TAM didn't exist. So maybe they would have thrown a DP contract or given him TAM and it would have been, you know, a 2 year deal with a third team option or something else like that. Instead, they know what they got out of most of these strikers in 2018. And for the most part, you know, the only two who are coming back were Skelchengashi, who already had a guaranteed contract and you weren't going to be able to move, and Nicky Jackson, who you're voluntarily bringing back on the cheap as a second-year player out of the Super Draft. So if nothing else, the Rapids have the opportunity to go and take a bunch of flyers on a bunch of other players who are unknowns rather than known crap. So, you know, we'll see whether or not there are any diamonds in the rough on that front. I'm having trouble, Mark, really seeing how the math is going to end up working out with that Castillo without some haggling or a little bit more information to clear things up. As I'm looking at the Liga MX table, I believe Liga MX teams still have one or two games left in the season. Monterrey is currently fifth in the table. So they're safe from relegation if Liga MX is having relegation this year. I know they neglected it last year or 2 years ago to prevent Chivas de Guadalajara from going down, and they're in the hunt for the Liga MX equivalent of the playoff at the end of the Apertura. And they're in a good position as far as the Clausus are. I presume Edgar Castillo probably not working his way back into the lineup there. I've heard rumblings that pre-arranged purchase fee for the end of the 2018 season for Castillo was close to or around $1 million. Castillo made $120,000 on the MLS budget for the Rapids in 2018. I presume he has earned a significant raise on that. I would not be, you know, I would think that, you know, based on how the Rapids are spending elsewhere, he's probably deserving of some targeted allocation money. I wouldn't be surprised if he's in that, you know, the max budget range, whatever that 450 plus change will be in 2019. Do the Rapids have the ability to give him that? What is he looking for in terms of both a salary and a term limit as a 31-year-old fullback who did not finish the season healthy? And then what's Monterrey looking at, knowing that, you know, he has a lot more value to the Rapids than he does to Monterrey on this front? Worst case scenario, he sits on the bench and provides a depth option at Monterrey. You know, is Monterrey trying to haggle, or the Rapids trying to haggle, saying you don't have a whole lot of use for this guy, as opposed to Monterrey saying, well, he has a lot more value to you than he does to us, so you should pay what he's valued to you? So they're thinking of upping that to more than $1 million. Could the Rapids afford $1 million transfer fee on Edgar Castillo? Existing track record based on past moves that Porik Smith and the administration has made, questionable at best. Are the Rapids, you know, willing to give Castillo, say, a 3 year deal and targeted allocation money through all those? I don't know. Can the Rapids haggle to get a reasonable price that the two can agree upon for the transfer fee? And can they also give Castillo what he wants from a money standpoint, maybe with a bunch of performance incentives and some team options to prevent in case of mass injury again, or if he just ends up falling off the cliff, you know, in the latter part of his careers? You know, I would think maybe a 2 year deal with a team option third. I would say making him a budget player, but then, you know, with some performance bonuses in there, they could potentially bring him into TAM category. I think that would be healthy for both sides. There's a lot of variables in there that have to happen. I presume that this is the number one priority other than the striker situation for Porik Smith and company right now. I think it'd be a good PR standpoint and a good, we know what we're actually doing or we're heading in that direction. If they could pull it off, there's a lot of moving parts in here and a lot of money that's on the table. And, you know, I'm not 100% certain that all that stuff is going to fall in the way that we want to. And it's not going to end up being, you know, where Castillo's contract is going to burn you in 2 to 3 years or they end up having to pay out the nose to Monterey.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on, Mark. One note that we have, not contract related. There's some good news on the Academy front, listeners. The Colorado Rapids U-12 team won the GA Cup earlier this week. They did so in defeating FC Dallas by a score of 3-0 in the final. And in the group stage, Mark, they finished top of the group and they were undefeated with 5 wins, no losses, 1 draw, and a +8 goal differential. The only draw that they had was against Houston Dynamo. And I believe for tiebreaker purposes, they technically beat the Houston Dynamo in PKs on that one. So good on the U-12s. Mark, this might go a little bit lower in terms of age range than something you've covered with the Rapids Academy. Can you tell us anything about the U-12 team and who should we sign to be the starting striker for the Rapids next year?
I make it a point to be woefully ignorant of everything below the U-13 level for a couple reasons. The main one is those kids don't need any additional pressure of two idiot podcasters rambling their names in public so that, you know, middle-aged balding men can show up with a case full of beer at the next U-13 training session and scream at them that they're not running hard enough, you know. And the other thing is a little bit more practical, which is that one thing that I've learned in following young players is that they kind of go up and down and emerge in a very rapid, surprisingly quick little bursts. Guys who you never heard of, who weren't on the Academy U-15 team, are the leading scorer or the best player on the U-16 team. One of the reasons for that is that the Colorado Rapids Academy has established itself as the best in the state, and that means that if they see a player for Colorado Rush or Real Colorado or one of the teams up north who's really impressive when he's 14 or 15 years old, they will bring him into the Rapid setup for their 16 or 17 season. And so a guy like Matt Hunley, who really came out of nowhere and is now at UCLA, was a Rapids player after having a number of years at another academy. I mean, even Court Ford was picked up from, I think he was with Greeley, before he was with Colorado. So, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to pay too much attention. That being said, you know, keep an eye out on some of those U-12 names. When they show up on the U-15s, you may want to look back and see, oh, was he on the U-12s? Has he had a taste of success, and so on. So I don't have any specifics, but I do know the general stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. I think that age is, you know, a little bit early to me making any projections about the professional opportunities. I say this more from knowing how this process works from a hockey's perspective in terms of going to Mite to juniors and what that looks like. You know, where a player is, you know, at, you know, under 12, I presume is, you know, roughly 9 to 11 is very different from where they'll be 14 to 15. Not just from a technical standpoint, but none of these kids have, you know, these kids are just starting puberty. And as you kind of see, at least that I've noticed, at least in following junior hockey and how that transitions to players going into the NHL level, you can see a lot of shifts in the various age groups that you have from that as kids are hitting their different growth spurts. And how does it work where, you know, in a soccer academy, kids go up with their age group rather than necessarily going up with where they are from a developmental standpoint, to where maybe it would be worthwhile to holding a late bloomer back or, you know, promoting a kid who's, you know, already growing a stash as he picks up the GA, you know, U-12 cup. And then at least I notice it with, you know, NHL rookies or guys, you know, in the minors and everything, you know, they're 17, 18 years old, and it's just been a couple years that they're getting used to their new body that is very different from what it was pre-puberty, and it takes them a year or two to figure that out in terms of the mechanics, let alone playing, you know, a highly technical complex sport like soccer or hockey. So definitely too premature to cover these guys, and you'll probably see a lot of variability both individually from year to year and the group as a whole, you know, it'd definitely be better to check in on the U15 or the U18 team or, you know, the U23s who you're much more well-versed in. Let's move on, Mark. Let's finish up this podcast. We'll try to keep it under an hour for you folks in the off-season. As I mentioned at the top of the show, all the other MLS teams who are not still in the playoffs are also having their, you know, press releases announcing the player options that they're picking up, who's out of contract, who are they declining, and other nuances associated with that. Mark, just going through the various teams who've already announced it, almost half the teams in the league now, is there anybody who jumps out at you who is a free agent or who had their contract declined, who maybe the Rapids should be looking at for a re-entry draft pick, or, you know, somebody else who, you know, is in MLS, who's proven who the Rapids could fill a spot in 2019? Who from other teams really stands out to you right now?
There isn't much. You know, in terms of names, you know, the Rapids should sign Fernando Bob because he has the best name in Major League Soccer. Eric Miller is out of contract again, but clearly the Rapids have already done that, and the rumor is that, or the word is that, not really a rumor when it appears on MLSsoccer.com, that Minnesota is trying to work out a new deal, with Eric Miller. You and I were talking that, Adolfo Machado, who has played some fullback and some center back for, and a little bit of defensive midfielder when needed, I think, for Houston, is a pretty decent player. The question of whether the Rapids really think that they need a defender is a good one. And then, you know, I actually want to hear your thoughts because you're the one who brought this to my attention, but that Benny Fellhaber is likely to be declaring himself a free agent at the end of this season. Could he help the Colorado Rapids in the midfield this year? That was about it. I don't think there's a whole lot of other things out there. The other thing, and we won't do it this show, we'll wait, is, of course, there will be players who will be exposed in the expansion draft. There will be players who will be exposed in the expansion draft, picked up by
FC Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, thank you, and then potentially traded to other teams for draft picks or something else. Those are kind of things that you may want to keep an eye on, which means you should look at a roster, every roster in Major League Soccer, not just as these guys weren't, their options weren't exercised, but also think a little bit bigger about who's on the roster, who's likely to not stay with that team. You know, if you're exposed in the expansion draft, you may feel like you are already extraneous to a team's plans. So a great example of that is Jared Watts, who was kind of left exposed and then kept off, you know, kept with the Rapids, but then eventually traded in the end anyways. So I still think, it, you know, going way back in the beginning of our conversation, you know, I was surprised Dylan Cerna got re-signed. You were not surprised that Dylan Cerna got re-signed. I would say I think there's still a chance that he winds up going in the expansion draft or gets traded as the offseason goes on. I would say the same for Marlon Hairston, who, you know, is under contract for the Rapids, but doesn't necessarily fit in maybe to where they're going next year. So, all right, was there anyone left on the around the league who you think you might covet, Matt, for the 2019 Rapids?
Yeah, so I'll circle back to a couple points that you had there, Mark. There is a half-day trade window in the morning Mountain Standard Time, the Sunday before, I believe it's the day after MLS Cup. So the MLS Cup's on Sunday, I believe it's Saturday, December 8th. There's a half day trade window, I believe, on either the 9th or the 10th. And then the expansion draft is the next day, either the 10th or the 11th. And that would be opportunities for teams to make concessions prior to making their, no, excuse me. So it's MLS Cup's on the 8th. There's a half day trade window on the 9th. Teams have to release their decisions as far as who they're protecting in the expansion draft on the 10th, and then the expansion draft for Cincinnati is on the 11th. So in that half-day trade window, MLS teams could be making deals to secure up their roster. They could be making deals or having discussions with FC Cincinnati regarding things that are going on for the expansion draft or potentially in the aftermath of the expansion draft. That's where your future considerations, negotiations will probably occur there. Just doing some quick math on the Rapids roster mark that currently has 18 players under contract for 2018. 15 of those players are not automatically protected. So as of right now, of players the Rapids have under contract, they'll be able to protect 11 of 15. So there'll be four of them who are unprotected from that list. So in terms of players who are potentially eligible from other teams, I focus my list, Mark, on holes that the Rapids distinctly have. So these won't necessarily be the best players or the best value players in terms of overall who's available in the pool right now, but they definitely fill a hole. There's a lot of outside backs on this list, and there's a couple ones that in short, I agree with you that this is pretty slim pickings. It's not going to be great value. And these are probably players to fill out a depth role. And a lot of the good pieces on here are ones that the Rapids probably have no chance of going on. So for example, Yamil Assad's contract option got declined, and DC United is working on the mother club in Argentina or Brazil that I can't remember the name of that, Assad is with to try and work something out there. Chances are, Emil Assad's probably coming back to DC United. I highly doubt the Rapids are really in the running for him. But the list I have, also from DC United, Vitas, who was formerly of the Portland Timbers, and then O'Neill Fisher was absolute dynamite for DC going down the stretch. But I believe he had, there were multiple injuries that was ultimately his ACL tearing, but it was his ACL, and then like the oil in his knee needs a change, and there was a pop tire, and there's a bunch of things going on. So I don't know with his health, it looks like on that. Jordan Harvey's contract got declined, from LAFC. I don't know how much opportunity the Rapids would have in terms of bringing in Benny Failhaber. I would certainly call his agent, but he was really happy at LAFC. I presume that he's either looking to them or he's looking for the best opportunity at his age, either to, you know, get paid on a 1-year deal and have a chance to win a title, at Benny Failhaber's age. I don't know that the Rapids can provide any of that to him, and I'm not sure that he's going to be able to be the number 10 that the Rapids are looking for, either next year or in long term. Michael DeLue, I thought, had a lot of really good moments for the Chicago Fire last year. He's available. Roland Lamaze available from FC Dallas, and who knows what's going on there with Oscar Pereja leaving for Liga MX. Really inconsistent, but, you know, could the Rapids take a flyer on him? You know, I'm making this list well aware that we don't have all the information as far as what their actual options look like for 2019. A lot of these decisions that teams are making were potentially because of either performance or other incentives that were maybe upping the salary. So just going and looking on the MLS Players Union and saying, oh, this was their salary in 2018, that's what it'll be in 2019. Not necessarily true, folks. I think between last year and the year before, Ignacio Piatti with the Montreal Impact had more than a $1.5 million up in his total salary. Pablo Maurer, great follow on Twitter, at MLSis, had a great article with a whole bunch of details, unprecedented in terms of information on a DP contract, on Wayne Rooney's contract with DC United, and all the various crazy and bizarre contract options and performance incentives and bonuses that are available to Rooney. Highly recommend that you check that out if you are a subscriber with The Athletic. And, you know, there's some stuff, obviously, with fewer zeros on the end of it, that some of these players are potentially dealing with it. The league and the players, then the Rapids will have access to, Mark and I, not necessarily with as much information. So who knows where Lamaze's salary is. Two big options out of Vancouver, Breck Shea, who would be totally fun to cover from a media standpoint, will either be really good or really, really crazy, probably both. Could be an option either in midfield. He's been a striker at times in his career. Could he be like a Sam Nicholson role? He's been an outside back for them. And then also Kai Kamara, very similar both in playing style to Yannick Bolli and similar salary. He's proven that he can score goals anywhere in the league. That said, he's also burned multiple locker rooms that he's been at in the past. Who knows if he could be a locker room cancer? He's also relatively old. in his career. Is he looking for one last payday? Is he looking for a chance to win a championship? I have no idea. And then maybe one other option there. I don't know how good he is, Mark, but Colin Warner was kind of the Jared Watts of Minnesota United this past year, and he is a Denver native. He would have been 8 years old when the Rapids came into existence in 1996. Would he be willing to take a hometown discount to sort of just be that fill-in just in case Jack Price gets hurt? He could also play a little bit of fullback. He could be a defense – or a little bit of center back. He could be a defensively-minded outside back, or he could fit into any one of those four midfield roles, really. I think he'd be, you know, the Rapids don't really have that kind of utility player who could play in a bunch of different spots right now. That was Jared Watts, to a lesser extent, Eric Miller. If he's willing to take a league minimum just to, you know, go home and, you know, have his family, if he still has family in Denver here, he might be an option. That said, really, Mark, I don't know that, you know, outside of paying a lot of money for these guys, I don't know that they're the list that I just gave you, if the Rapids hit on all of those targets that they're potentially looking for, I still don't know that that's enough for this team to make a, to become a playoff team. Other than Kai Kamara, I don't think there's a reliable 10-goal striker in the entire list, let alone players who the Rapids would potentially be able to actually sign. There's no reliable number 10 other than maybe Benny Fehlhaber here. And there's a lots of could work out, could end up being very meh options at the fullback positions, two positions that the Rapids need to shore up, Edgar Castillo coming back or otherwise. I guess that's it as far as content that we have, Mark. We are recording this on Eve. Oh, go ahead.
You covered a lot of players there, Matt. That was a really good deep dive. I'll just add one more to the whole list, which was and now I can't remember his name. Campbell, is it Joseph Campbell, the center back for Chicago Fire? He's also out of contract.
Yes.
So
yes.
I don't know. He showed good 2 years ago, and then this year he completely disappeared off the radar, and I don't know what the story was there, but. I don't think we're likely to take a flyer on him, but, you know, there's still some gas in the tank. And I think for all these players, it's just interesting to follow their careers and see, is there anything left? You know, can they have a turnaround year next year with somebody? Who will give them a chance is a good question. But
yeah.
Anyhow, good job, kind of really plumbing the depths and scraping, a way to see what's there.
Thanks, Mark. I definitely ascribe to the – I can't remember if this thing actually has a name, but there's a common statement or theory in the NBA that there's – you know, there's the LeBron Jameses and the James Hardens and the Chris Pauls, who you put them on any team in the league in any system, and they're going to have success. And there's about, you know, 15 to 20% of players in the NBA who are just on the wrong team – or fitting into the wrong role, similar to what we talked about with Enzo Martinez, or just not in the right with the right coach, to where if they just get a change of scenery in a slightly different role with a different team and a different coach, maybe get into a new city, that, you know, they could be, you know, they could be much better than what they've shown. You know, a really good example at the MLS level that I'll give, you know, is Giassi Zardes. You know, who was hurt in part of 2017, got run out of town by the LA Galaxy, you know, was playing it right back for a couple of games under Siggy Smith. And all he needed was a new atmosphere, a situation, you know, where he was going to be successful. Greg Berhalter was going to put him in a position to where his skill set matched what he was being asked to do. And it was just a new environment where there wasn't the same pressures and, environmental stress that he was going under. And he was able to have success. I would say that there's at least 10% of players in MLS right now who were in that similar role, to where maybe they just weren't successful in 2018 for various reasons, that if the Rapids see them as a square peg that can fit into a square hole that they have right now, Hudson sees something in them to where they can have success and provide more value than they have for their previous teams. Let's move on, Mark. We are recording this on the eve of the second legs of the conference finals for the MLS Cup playoffs. Mark, do you have any hot takes or any opinions on who's making MLS Cup or what the rest of the MLS season has in store?
The game that I focused on was the Western Conference games because I know those teams better. So SKC versus Portland in that match on Sunday night was kind of an exciting 0-0 draw if you're a soccer purist and you really like watching how teams go at each other. I think the thing that was exciting and fun to watch about that game was how much home field advantage plays in. That Portland really, their fans were behind them, and so they kind of possessed the ball more. They possessed with urgency. They had a lot of really exciting chances.
Everything shifts tomorrow night as we go to Kansas City. And I think that clearly shows that SKC should hold a pretty significant advantage in that match. That being said, they didn't look great in the first leg, so you could really slice it either way. I think the advantage goes to Sporting, and then they just have a lot of very, very talented players, and they've mixed and matched with who has been kind of above average and exceptional from game to game. You know, sometimes it's Johnny Russell, sometimes it's Daniel Shalloway, sometimes it's really their midfield that's the star of that game, and sometimes it's, you know, Ike Opara and Matt Beisler doing what they do best. So that's and you know, I think Tim Ilya in goal is basically the best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer, period. No matter how much teams in Europe are willing to play for Zach Steffen to then wind up loaning him to Spain anyways. But that's another matter. So I got to give the advantage to SKC on that one. I don't have a ton of thoughts on Atlanta and New York. Matt, what do you think about the Eastern Conference?
I mean, as I said on Last Word SC and as I've said on Twitter all this week, you know, the Red Bulls completely abandoned their identity. I was so excited for this series because you had two teams that had two distinct gears that they were really, really good at. One of which, if one team was in their first gear, the other team was going to be played to an advantage in going into their second gear. Not as good as what they do purely, but really good at negating what the other team does well. And the Red Bulls completely abandoned that. They did not gegenpress. They did not play that up-tempo ball with the possession. They chose to voluntarily sit deep and try and counter. They played the way that I would have expected Columbus Crew to play in a first leg playoff game against Atlanta United. They play the way I would have expected the Philadelphia Union or the Montreal Impact or certainly the Colorado Rapids to play against them. And in doing so, they completely ceded the game. They ceded the ball and they just walked right into Atlanta completely running roughshod over them. I don't know, in my time covering the league seriously from a journalistic standpoint, I have seen a more hashtag that's so Metro moment for the New York Red Bulls than that. The one game that they absolutely had to be themselves and they were going to be put in a position to succeed, they completely abandoned it. Multiple players had their worst game of the season. They collectively had their worst performance of the year and they had it in the biggest game of the year. And now nothing short of a miracle is going to, you know, down the ghost of the curse of Curricolo in 2018. On the other side of it, I think we're up for an absolute cracker between SKC and Portland. Winner take all, may the best team win. I don't know that necessarily matters because, you know, I think either way, I think Atlanta's going to be hosting MLS Cup. And I think they're going to win it on December 8th by multiple goals. I for one, welcome our new five-stripe overlords.
Well said. I do think when you have that much expectation loaded up on your team, I kind of wonder whether there isn't a chance of face planting there. But yeah, I tend to be the idiot who takes the underdog in the final and then loses $20 to my friends. So I will probably pull for the Western Conference team against Atlanta in the final, and I will probably lose $10 to you, Matt. So you may want to get in on that action early, Rapids fans, and try to make a 5-1 or a 4-1 deal with me, because I will be a sucker to that bet every time.
Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter individually at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard. Check out our work at lastwordonsoccer.com and Pittsburgh Soccer Now, and TBD in Mark's case as far as MLS and Rapids musings. You can subscribe to Holding the Highline wherever you get your podcast. Just search for Rapids 96 Podcast or Holding the Highline. Check us out on Twitter at Rapids 96 Podcast. You can email the show at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Mark, what's our schedule look like with Hanukkah coming up soon?
Man, we should just keep talking. Don't worry about it. I will be going on vacation in the end of December, and I'm actually going to be back in Colorado from December 13th to the 16th to see my wife graduate and get her doctorate in physical therapy from the University of Colorado. So hopefully maybe I can carve out a couple hours to get a beer with a couple of y'all, or at least you, Matt, at the very, very least we can go get beers. So back in the motherland, should be great.
Excellent stuff. Listeners, we'll see you next week where we'll probably be doing our preview for the MLS expansion draft and talking about finding something else to talk about. We've had a couple interviews that we're trying to work out right now with the Rapids that are interesting and a little bit off the wall. You know, we'll see what we get done and what will be available to you next week.